Yeah, I'll, I have to say that's the biggest win our team's ever had. A great team effort and a very, very classy gesture also from Simon as well.
You are listening to the Cycling Podcast at the Giro d'Italia in association with Rafa. From Grand Tours to group rides, the Champs-Élysées to coffee stops, Rafa exists to celebrate the world's most beautiful sport. Today we are in Mount Etna.
Cozze, cittere, cozze, cozze, vicine, nu spicu de cicora, nu spicu de cicora.
That was Matt White, the sports director of Mitchelton Scott, who have had, well, they've had one of their best days ever in the Giro d'Italia today. First and second on the stage with Esteban Chavez and Simon Yates. And Simon Yates is in the pink jersey, the first time he's held a leader's jersey at one of the three Grand Tours. He's been looking very good over the first few days of the Giro, and he really confirmed that today with a fantastic attack. It's been a pretty mind-blowing stage and a pretty mind-blowing day for me. I'm Lionel Burney and Daniel Freeb. Hello.
Hello. Why has it been a mind-blowing day?
It's been fraught with logistical issues and the fact that I haven't eaten for 24 hours.
That's the real nub of the matter. That's the real crux of the matter, isn't it? You haven't eaten. When you say it's been mind-blowing, I mean, it's been fairly mundane by most people's standards on the Giro, apart from the fact that you haven't had your four enormous meals.
Oh, that's a little harsh. But I do have a sense of deja vu here, Daniel, because, well, where are we?
Well, we're in the queue to get on the bus, which is going to cross the Strait of Messina. Remember last year?
The bus to cross the Strait of Messina.
I'm looking at a lot of team buses because we're in a big queue surrounded by team vehicles. We're about to get on the boat. Remember last year, we even talked about the bridge that was never built over the Strait of Messina. Still not been built a year later. Remember the book which allowed you to premiere your wonderful Italian yesterday, the Viaggio in Italia, that was written in the 50s, and already back then they were talking about the bridge over the Strait of Messina being built. But yeah, 2018, still no bridge.
I think that's quite an engineering feat. I think a year, it would take longer than a year to build a bridge from Sicily here to the mainland. We'll come back to Lionel Learns Italian a little bit later on with some breaking news on that. But first of all, let's recap the stage. Stage 6 of the Giro from Caltanissetta to Etna, 169 kilometres and the first serious summit finish of the race. And it was shaped by a break of almost 30 riders, and it was the strength and power of those riders that really caught the eye. Esteban Chavez and Jack Haig of Mitchelton Scott, Robert Hessink of Lotto NL Jumbo, David de la Cruz and Sergio Henao of Team Sky. There were three riders from Team UAE Emirates in there, including Yann Polansch, the winner on Etna last year, albeit on a different road. Tom Dumoulin's two teammates, Chad Hager and Sam Ooman, were in there. Who else was in there? Gosh, yes, Reichenbach and Roy for Groupama FDJ. They were in there for Thibaut Pinot. And a couple of riders from the Israel Academy team as well, Ben Hermans and Ruben Plaza. And that break made it a hard, fast race. And it was on the climb when they were all still away. And as the gradient bit, so the gaps opened up. And that's when we began to see who of the favourites was looking good and who was not. And the answer to that really was that Simon Yates was looking exceptional, because as the gap closed and the breakaway riders were caught, leaving only Chavez out in front, Yates attacked a group that contained Thibaut Pinot, George Bennett, Domenico Pozzovivo, and the others who had joined up, including Miguel Angel Lopez, Tom Dumoulin, Fabio Aru and Chris Froome. Yates attacked, bridged up to Chavez in the final few hundred metres, and the Mitchelton Scott riders completed a 1-2. So the stage win for Chavez and the pink jersey for Yates, who dispossessed Rohan Dennis, who slipped down having finished a minute and 4 seconds behind Chavez. All of the other overall favourites did pretty well. Mike Woods was one notable rider to lose time. He was 16th at 57 seconds. Max Schachmann also slipped down, losing the white jersey in the process. Louis Menkes didn't have a great day, losing 3.5 minutes. And Davide Formolo was caught in a crash at the bottom of the climb and lost over 5 minutes. So his chances of a top 10 finish are looking a little slim now. A quick note for Ben Hermans, the rider with the Israel Cycling Academy team, because of all of the breakaway riders, he was the next best after Chavez, finishing 11th. So Yates in pink, 16 seconds ahead of Dumoulin. Chavez is in third place at 26 seconds. The Ciclamino jersey stays on the shoulders of Viviani. Chavez is now the king of the mountains, with Yates second and Thibaut Pinot third. And the white jersey is now held by Richard Carapaz of Movistar.
Well, we've shuffled about 6 feet further forward in the queue. We're following a Team UAE Emirates team car onto the boat.
We're going to get some cracking scoops on this boat, aren't we? Because the whole Giro Peloton, it's basically the Giro Peloton plus us. We'll probably still contrive to get it wrong, make some mistakes tomorrow. But
well, we'll come to that as well a little bit later on. Corrections Corner makes its debut at this Giro. But Daniel, let's think back to this morning, or rather this afternoon, because it was quite a late start, a short stage, only 169 kilometres from Caltanissetta. Did you have any sense then that the stage was going to pan out to be quite as exciting as it was?
I think on the way to the start this morning, Lionel, we talked about the fact that at this point of the race last year, an awful lot of the riders were talking a lot about the final week, and they were almost getting their excuses in early for the what was also an Etna stage, a Mount Etna stage last year, saying that, you know, maybe not that much was going to happen, and they needed to keep plenty of energy back for the last week. And we haven't heard those same noises in anticipation of the Etna stage this year, maybe because we were going up a slightly harder way, and maybe because there are more contenders, or more people that the contenders are worried about, maybe because of the lack of time trialing. I'm not sure, but certainly the noises we were hearing suggested that it was going to be a bit of a sort out on Mount Etna this afternoon, and so it proved.
Well, yeah, it was very interesting. Obviously, that big break went, and it was significant, really, that the break had so many powerful riders in it, letting Chavez and Henao and, there were so many strong climbers in there. The fact that the break went clear on the climb, that was also significant, and it meant that it really shaped the race on Etna, didn't it? What was interesting, I spoke to George Bennett from Team Lotto Enel Jumbo. I went to their bus kind of thinking, I'll speak to Enrico Battaglin, stage winner yesterday. Did have a little chat with him. He was obviously very happy to have ended his four-year drought in terms of stage wins at the Giro. His last victory here was in 2014. And I spoke to Bennett about how he was going to approach the first mountain stage of the race. And, of course, he ended up in a group with some significant riders.
What are your thoughts about Etna today?
I've never seen it, never ridden up it. Read a lot about it, looked at some profiles, and you know, I think it will be selective, but I think it won't be decisive. I think I just have to go with it. You know, I don't have a plan at the moment on how I'm going to race, but I think the thought, you know, like there's two schools of thought. There's you know, if it gets to a point where there's no one has teammates left, and you can jump away, especially on one of the flatter parts, because that's when no one wants to chase, because there's more of a advantage to being in the wheels. And if you can jump away there and get that hesitation, then it's a good moment to go. On the other hand, you burn a lot of matches when you go in the when it's on a flatter part and other guys are in the wheels. So you kind of have to go off your feeling. And
feeling good is all relative, isn't it? Because it's how everyone else around you is going as well. I mean, if the pace goes on and you can feel good 1 second and then not so good the next. I mean, how much are you looking at the body language of other riders when you're in the group?
I don't look at that. I can't tell the difference. I mean, I look at Chris Froome on a flat easy stage. He looks like he's about to get dropped, and you know, look, it's I can't tell anything from that. I heard all the old stories about people looking at each other and shit, but I wouldn't know. But I can say Yates and Pozzovivo, I think, and maybe Pino are the strongest guys, and I think that's pretty clear from just how, you know, like in decisive moments in the race so far. But yeah, I mean, feeling good. You can feel as good as you like, but you know, it's not worth a pinch of shit if the other guys are feeling better. So yeah.
So the Kiwi rider there, George Bennett, called it, really. He said he was expecting the likes of Simon Yates, Domenico Pozzovivo and Thibaut Pinot to be very strong on the climb. And at one stage, it was those three plus Bennett who were away off the front. And it was everybody else, including Dumoulin and Froome and Lopez, playing catch-up.
Yeah, it was interesting what George Bennett said about Chris Froome, wasn't it? Any attempt really to read the body, to sort of decipher the body language of a general classification contender before you get to the first big climb is really a futile effort. And you mentioned Pino there. I thought he'd have a good day today, not least because, as we've mentioned on a couple of occasions in the last week, he spent a bit of time out here in the spring in Sicily, and in particular looking at the Etna stage. And in fact, I discussed precisely that matter with his cannoli guzzling brother and coach Julien at the FDJ Groupama FDJ. No mistakes allowed tonight at their team bus this morning.
We stayed about 7 days in Sicilia in the beginning of April, and we recognized two stages, the first stage of Caltagirone, and we sleep in the city of the finish in an agriturismo, and then we did the stage of Etna, and after we stay the rest of the week near the sea in a big villa with four teammates and three staff. So we recognize two times the last climb of today.
And when you go up a climb like Etna in a training camp like that, are you trying to simulate race efforts, or are you simply looking at the terrain?
The boss, we recognize the road, because in Sicilia there is a lot of technical parts on the bad road, so it's important to well know these courses of these two hard stages. But Thibaut enjoyed the land of the climb here, so it was a good week with 6 days of hard training to simulate stage races during these 6 days.
What's different in Thibaut's condition in preparation compared to last year when he came to the Giro? Anything, or is it exactly the same?
Well, it's close to last year, but the first month of the year was with less workload of 2017. He raced less, only Catalonia and Tour of the Alps before Giro. So lots of freshness and big motivation to do better this year at Giro.
And lots of cross-country skiing, I think. Does that help him? Are you happy, as his coach, are you happy for him to do that?
Yeah, but because the winter was really cold in France this year. So he likes cross-skiing, and it's easy near his hometown to do that. So he enjoyed that, and he did some races. So a lot of pressure, and it's a good activity to work. Similar effort than cycling, without pain, because skiing is not muscular pain after skiing, so it's really good.
And just last question, Julien. I know that you have fallen in love with Sicily and the cannoli. Why? What? Explain to me this love affair between Thibaut and Italy. What's at the base of it, do you think?
I don't know. Maybe a part of genetics, because I love also the atmosphere here. But the landscape are nice. The whole town with the whole center of the city. He enjoy that, and he feel happy in this atmosphere. Yes.
So that was this morning, Daniel. And of course, by the time we got to the finish on Mount Etna, the race was, well, it was approaching the final and decisive stages. We drove the climb, didn't we? It was significantly tougher than the way they went up Etna last year. There was, well, before the kind of official climb, there was a lot of climbing, more or less coming up from sea level, weren't they, up to the top there. And there were some really steep ramps, which Matt White, the Mitchelton Scott sports director, kind of marked my card about a couple of days ago, or maybe it was yesterday, that there were some areas where it would be possible to turn the screw and put riders in difficulty. And I talked at the start about the significance of that big break and the power of the riders that were in it. Just run through some of them. Chavez and Jack Haig, of course, for Mitchelton Scott. Quintana, I mean, amazing to see him up there. Dyer Quintana, Nairo's brother, of course. The Robert Hessink of Lotto Enel Jumbo was up there. He was warming up on the turbo trainer at the start this morning, which is obviously usually a clue as to whether a rider is trying to get into a break. But it took 40 kilometres for that break to go, and it was extremely hard fought getting into it. Jan Polansch of Team UAE Emirates, Daniel, not Bahrain, as we said.
I'm so aggrieved about this, Lionel, because you confessed shortly after I realised that I'd made the mistake yesterday, that you heard me in real time, you knew I'd made the mistake, and yet you just didn't correct me.
You were skipping on. I didn't want to interrupt your flow. You were making a very good point otherwise, notwithstanding that small inaccuracy. Sky had David Dela Cruz and Sergio Henao in there. You know, it's not often we see Sky putting riders up the road. There was Sam Ooman in there for Team Sunweb. There was Ciccone of Bardiani, who won a stage at Sestola a couple of years ago. Reichenbach, of course, Groupama, was up there for Thibaut Pinot. So there were a lot of teams represented. Really, the only team that missed out was Astana, and they obviously had to do quite a lot of pulling when they reached the before and then on the bottom of the climb. But really, the day belonged to Mitchelton Scott. They played it absolutely perfectly, and it's tempting always when something works out that well to think that they would have planned exactly that. Oh, let's get Chavez and Haig into the break, and then you know, when the gap's coming down and it's bridgeable, we'll send Simon Yates off after to just sort of ride up to Chavez, and then Chavez can have the stage and Yates can have the jersey. But I mean, you can't possibly make a plan like that in advance. That was cooked up on the road.
Yeah, it was. Although, you know, we've seen that team do this kind of thing on several occasions in the past. They didn't have such a good year in terms of pulling off this kind of move last year. In 2016, there were a couple of notable ones, particularly at the Vuelta, which really worked fantastically. What was different today? Well, Esteban Chavez is nearing his best again, if he's not completely back to his best. Chavez has also been doing a lot of climbing on long climbs in Colombia, and I know that, you know, just speaking to some of the guys at Mitchelton Scott tonight, they were pretty confident of his ability to finish that move today, because he's been doing perhaps a bit less work on his explosive climbing, but more on longer climbs like the Etna finish today. And Yates is really riding better than we've ever seen him before. I mean, he's also been preparing for the Giro at altitude and came in very fresh, hadn't done that much racing in the month before the Giro. So, you know, when you've got two fantastic cars like that to play, and then Jack Haig is getting stronger, I think, as we said the other day, he's getting strong with every Grand Tour, every major race. And then, you know, Kreuziger behind, and they were in a position where, although it might have looked like a risky move, they were very, very well covered. And also, with that group being so big out there, I think the risk was mitigated. Everyone was kind of in the same boat there, and they were never going to completely burn Chavez and let him fall irremediably out of the general classification with that move today.
Well, let's hear from Matt White, Mitchelton Scott sports director. Well, we both spoke to him at the finish, but
your interview was better than mine, apparently.
That's what you claimed.
No, you didn't.
Here's Matt White. Was there any discussion about who would win the stage, considering there's a time bonus on the line?
No, none with us, that's for sure. If those two boys spoke in the last 30 seconds, maybe they did. But I think this is the classy act from Yatesy, that, you know, he didn't want to steal the win off Esteban, and he knew he'd put time into his rivals. And you know, we've taken the stage and the jersey, and the main thing as well is we've put some nice time into our guys. And we said from the start, whenever we see an opportunity to put time into Froome or Devlin, we have to do it, because we know that they're better time trialers than we are.
How much of it was plotted out today? I mean, was it plotted out at all, or was it just talked about, seize some opportunities if they come up?
No, look, the plan definitely changed when we saw the break was taking so long to go. Because once it was taking so long to go, we knew the guys in the break, a lot of there would be some stronger guys in there. And so once we did have two guys in the break, then we formed a plan. Obviously, you know, Simon and Mikel and Roman could sit there and wait and see what happened. And Jack was told to really push the brake. And then Esteban just rides smart. And we were really quite confident if we had a good gap, even at the bottom of the climb with 20K to go, that Esteban's the type of rider who can go from far. And it worked out quite well.
How long did it take for the brake to go?
I can't exactly remember, but around 40 kilometres. Around 40 kilometres. And, you know, the first 40K was really tough terrain. So when it went, it went. And the bunch did prop for a while, and that's when it went out to 3.5 minutes.
Because there was a lot of quality in that break. I mean, what were you thinking when riders of the sort of calibre of Ooman and all of some of the other Ciccone's won a stage not dissimilar to this?
And De La Cruz. Yeah. But it was good because, you know, it went on a climb. So the guys that were in there and Reichenbach, there's some great climbers in there. And I was really happy with the group. It would have been a lot worse if it had gone on the flat because you would have had a different group of guys in there. And look, we always marked Sicily as a really important point of the Giro, and it certainly didn't disappoint. And you know, we've had a great 3 days here in Sicily, and we've still got a long way to go.
So Mitchelton Scott now have Simon Yates in the pink jersey and Esteban Chavez third, 26 seconds behind. There, well, Dumoulin is in a Mitchelton Scott sandwich, isn't he? He's in second place overall at 16 seconds. And the gaps behind aren't particularly significant at this point, but looking ahead to the final three stages before the rest day, well, tomorrow is going to almost certainly be a sprint. And then there's these two sort of medium mountain stages, which aren't going to pose any trouble, I wouldn't have thought, to Yates and Chavez, are they?
No, I don't think they will, but I see certain parallels between the Montevergine di Mercogliano stage. So that's the first summit finish on, what day is it, Lionel?
Saturday.
Don't get this wrong. On Saturday, and it's not steep. It's probably, well, it is an easier climb than the Europa finish that Dumoulin won on last year, but there might be a similar opportunity for a powerful, very powerful rider like Tom Dumoulin to gain some capital there. Same again to a lesser extent the day after on Gran Sasso d'Italia. So I think, you know, it's a different set of circumstances from last year, but there are some parallels. It was interesting just watching Dumoulin warm down after the finish. You know, I had a bit of deja vu again, thinking back to the finish on Etna last year, and at that point we had no real idea what he was going to do over the next 2 weeks, and he was very much a dark horse for the overall Giro title, and he went on to win it quite convincingly, of course. I actually spoke to Dumoulin at the finish, but I also spoke to his director sportif, Mark Reef, first. So you're going to hear Mark Reef and then Tom Dumoulin at the finish.
Yeah, I think that that on the end, at the finish line, there were 6-7 guys in the same time who were quite on the same level. And I think that only one guy is far above the rest, and that is Yates.
So Tom said yesterday that he didn't feel that great. You said it again today, you've just told me. Yeah. That's a good sign then, if he's staying with the leaders and even attacking when he's not feeling very good.
Yeah, exactly. So it can only become better, in our opinion. He's still searching for the good feeling. So when he's getting that in upcoming days, maybe week, then we can see an even better Tom Dumoulin.
Hard day, difficult finish, and... yeah, I wasn't super, but I was also not bad, so difficult to say how it will be, but for today it was all right.
Tom, Mark Reef, your director sportif, said you didn't feel that great today. You said you didn't feel that great yesterday. Was it a bit of a risk to attack even though you weren't at 100%?
Maybe, yes. I didn't feel very good in the beginning of the climb, and then it actually got better, and then I decided to spice things up a little bit and to see how everyone was doing. I felt that I had something left, not a lot, but some, and I wanted to know if I was the only one feeling like that, and yeah, how the others were. So yeah, well, eventually it was all right.
I remember you were up here warming down this time last year on Etna, and you seemed almost relieved to have stayed with the leaders. I mean, how different is your frame of mind today?
should be the same, I guess. Yeah, maybe I should think like that.
So far, so good, as far as you're concerned.
So good, yeah. I wasn't super today, but like I said, I was there and was all right.
So Yates is in the pink jersey, and Daniel, as you said when we were chatting on our way down from Etna, the thing about Simon Yates is, you know, he's got this dogged streak, hasn't he? Incredibly difficult to drop, and even when he does get dropped, he doesn't concede fistfuls of time. He's one of those riders that can just limit losses. There's kind of a mental toughness about him, and Adam Yates, his twin brother, of course, but he's not actually riding here. But he's going to take a fair bit of shifting between now and, you know, the time trial, and it strikes me that the top sort of 3, 4, 5 riders, really looking down to Rowan Dennis in sixth place, he obviously lost the pink jersey today, but those five, Yates, Dumoulin, Chavez, Pozzovivo and Pino, they've done themselves a power of good moving up the GC at the first opportunity.
Yeah, they have, and Yates, I think, was grossly underestimated by a lot of people before the Giro. I mean, I saw lists of, you know, star ratings of riders, and he wasn't even included in some of them. In others, he got maybe 1 or 2 stars. You know, he's a guy who's finished in the top 10 of the Tour de France. He's still young. He's still developing. I know that Mitchelton Scott also feel that they've made a bit of a breakthrough with him in terms of his positioning. He's one of these riders who tends to like it at the back of the bunch. He doesn't particularly enjoy or relish the stress up at the business end of the peloton, certainly not for the duration of stages. He tends to try to move forward when things get interesting, but I think he's doing much better on that, so I understand from Mitchelton Scott. And as you say, Lionel, he's a very, very consistent rider. As we said yesterday, not a whole lot of time trialling left in this Giro. He's also not the worst time trialist in the world. So he, if he wasn't a real contender or considered a real contender by his rivals before today, then he certainly is now.
A community around the world. Stories and films with the most compelling characters. The world's finest apparel. Explore the world of cycling with Rafa.
Thank you to Rafa for sponsoring the cycling podcast. If you would like to go on a cycling holiday in Italy, Rafa Travel are organising a range of trips to the Dolomites, the Lakes and Tuscany. They run from between sort of June and October, so all across the summer. And, well, I can pretty safely say they won't spend any of their time sitting in a queue to get onto a ferry. But if a Rafa cycling holiday sounds like the sort of thing you would like to do, go to rafa.cc/travel. Daniel, we are still in this queue here. It's perhaps our penance for a number of factual errors in last night's podcast, so we ought to just acknowledge those on Corrections Corner.
It's quite interesting though, isn't it, Lionel, to observe here. It's doing some good people watch. We've got, just in front of the car, we've got Mario Scirea, who's the director sportif of Fabio Aru, the UAE team. Aru went okay today, didn't pull up any trees, did he? He actually said at the finish that he acknowledges that there are people stronger than him at the moment in this race. Anyway, Scirea is there with his old colleague from his Liquigas days, Stefano Zanatta, who's now the DS4 Bardiani. I wonder what they're discussing. They look very animated, but then Italians always look animated. You know, I mean, as you know, Lionel, you've been doing a lot of hand gesturing the last few days. You're fluent in Italian hand gestures.
I'm fluent in Italian hand gestures, as we heard last night, not fluent in Italian. But this sounds like a diversion away from Corrections Corner. Last night, Daniel, I asked you, I apologise, I put you on the spot. It's kind of poor podcasting etiquette to kind of ask a yes-no question. But I'd also forgotten Giovanni Battaglin. He did win the Giro d'Italia. We said that he didn't, but in fact he won it the same year that he won the Vuelta, 1981. And the amazing thing about that was that the Vuelta ran from April the 21st to May the 10th, and he won overall. And then 3 days later, he was in Brescia for the start of the Giro d'Italia, which ran until June the 7th. So, 6 weeks on the bike, two Grand Tours in the bag. Not even Eddie Merckx managed that, I don't think. Oh, hang on a minute. Not in that time frame. Oh, goodness me. Let's not.
Well, hang on. Merckx in 73, they were very close together, weren't they? The Vuelta. It was again a few days.
It was. Anyway.
Still not as impressive as the greatest feat to my mind ever in terms of racing, major races back to back, was Zenon Jaskula, in the Polish rider. I'm scared of saying the year now. I think it was 1997. It might have been 1998. I'm going to have to check this. However, Jaskula finished the Tour de France. He went straight to, I'm not going to say which airport it was. It might have been Orly. It might have been Charles de Gaulle. But he went straight to the airport, got on a plane, went to the Tour of Portugal, and rode in the prologue the next day in the Tour of Portugal. Won the Tour of Portugal. And I think he met his wife as well at the Tour of Portugal. She was a podium girl.
So many facts that may or may not be right in that one. I don't know. Bahrain Merida's sports director, Brent Copeland, pointed out that we underestimated the number of stages that were in Sicily last year. I was racking my brains as we were talking about the Sicily stages last year. And of course, there was the Etna stage, and then there was the one here to Messina, where we sat in this very queue.
And Lionel, this explains perfectly why I got mixed up last night with Jan Polansch. Jan Polansch won the stage on Etna last year, and he's also, in my mind, interchangeable with Luca Pibernek, who in the stage to Messina, can you remember, he raised his arms, he thought he'd won. Right. So there was a whole kind of Sicilian spaghetti a la Norma in my head going on there with Slovenians.
Middle Eastern team, Slovenian, Eastern European riders. Oh, dear. Well, I think the summary of this, the upshot of all this, is that I think both of our brains are like sort of sideboard drawers, aren't they? They contain a lot of stuff: ball of string, roll of sellotape, pair of scissors, box of matches, all of that kind of stuff. But it's all in there somewhere, and sometimes facts fall out and hit the floor in the wrong order. So sorry about that. We do try and get everything as correct as we possibly can, but we're out here on the road, aren't we? We're cut adrift from our usual resources. We're having to live on our wits a little bit, hoping to get on this ferry, hoping to have dinner. We've had a pretty tricky day ourselves.
The point, it's the second time you've said that now.
Well, it's obviously playing on my mind. We didn't have any dinner last night. We had a very small breakfast, and really a lovely place to stay. But last night they presented us with a little checklist of breakfast items from which we were allowed to choose four. You went for a double cappuccino strategy, didn't you, Daniel? And I thought that was a risk, seeing as we hadn't had dinner at that stage. I went for a double croissant strategy. I think that maybe has saved me today. We went off into the Sicilian countryside looking for a restaurant that I'm not sure existed. Today we missed lunch because we had to swap our hire car. I mean, it's been a succession of difficult, challenging events, hasn't it?
The most eventful moment of the day, Lionel, was when I tried to order a cafe liscio, which is common parlance, common coffee parlance in the north of Italy. That's what you say when you want a neat espresso, so nothing added. And it was pandemonium when I asked for that, wasn't it?
Well, they were crazy, and we might hear a little bit of the explanation for that. No, we won't, will we? We're not putting that in the kilometre zero that's coming. See, this is how scrambled our minds are. But there's a kilometre zero coming tomorrow as well, kind of on Sicily and the other Nibali. That will be out for friends of the podcast tomorrow. If you want to sign up as a friend of the podcast, it's thecyclingpodcast.com/friends. But that's enough of us rambling on and making excuses for our own failings. One point that I can hear a lot of people wondering, and it was something that I wondered because I asked Matt White about it, was as Yates and Chavez were coming up towards the line, was there a flicker of, well, who's who, what's the pecking order here? Because the time bonus is on the line of 10 seconds, 6 seconds for first and second. I mean, it's only a matter of 4 seconds, but would we have been reading too much into it? What was the etiquette of that? I mean, I've got my opinion, but what do you think?
Well, I think it was the obvious thing to do. Traditionally, that's what does happen when someone is heading for the pink jersey. The other guy gets the stage win, even often when they're in different teams. So when they're teammates, that's certainly what you would expect to be the case, as it was. The 4 seconds, I would be slightly nervous of that coming back to bite me if I was Simon Yates and if I was Matt White, the direct sportive, just because there are so many riders in contention here at the Giro at the moment. You know, we predict what we said at the start of the race, that halfway through the Giro it will probably be a different scenario, and some will have fallen by the wayside, but at the moment this looks as though it's going to be a very, very close race, and with not much time trialling, and I can imagine it coming down to small margins, and those 4 seconds might look slightly, well, as though they were frittered away in that very noble gesture towards the end.
The thing is, though, I mean, Matt White has made that point about the race possibly coming down to seconds when it gets into the final week. But the point is, you're talking about human beings here, aren't you? Esteban Chavez had been off the front for 100 and something kilometres, had ridden extremely well on the climb, and had done more than enough to deserve the stage win. And you've got to have a... You've got to have a kind of happy dinner table. Everyone's got to get a bit of something when, you know, they've got it all there in their hands to grasp. They've kind of hedged their bets a little bit there. But more importantly, I think Chavez earned that victory without any doubt.
Well, and I think more importantly, just to almost contradict myself, I think Yates has earned the dedication, the devotion of Chavez for the rest of the race should he need it with that gesture. And is that going to be worth more than 4 seconds over the 3 weeks? It probably will. And just on the kind of harmony in the Mitchelton Scott team, that's one area in which they've really excelled, at least as far as sort of what we can see on the outside, particularly with the Yates brothers and Chavez. They have, well, there's never been even a peep of discord between those three, has there? And you know, the Kreuziger's there and Jack Hager there, and both of those two guys, to be honest, in the last month or so have been riding at a level whereby in other teams they might be expecting to lead, but it looks like a pretty happy camp.
Yeah, and let's not overlook the fact that Jack Hager rode himself inside out for Chavez and ultimately Yates as well, because, you know, Haig was the diesel in that group for them, you know, or the engine in that group. I mean, he's a fantastic climber as well. I mean, he's not just there for sort of legwork. He's a classy rider as well, and they're looking like a really formidable outfit at the moment. But we'll see how it pans out when we hit the climbs again. I was just going to say we were going to unveil our poll for the first Pedaleur de Charme of the Giro this evening, but logistics have beaten us, really. I haven't had a chance to go through all of the nominations, so we'll extend it by a day. Tomorrow is a flat stage, might be a little less complicated for us and there may be a little less to talk about in the race. So keep the nominations coming. You can mention them to us on Twitter at @cycling_podcast. Anyone who's been pedalling charmingly, spotted somebody in the break, or maybe somebody will do something tomorrow, and we'll draw up the shortlist, and you can all vote tomorrow evening.
The Cycling Podcast is supported by Science in Sport. Independent research shows 10% of sports nutrition products fit get a professional rider banned. Trust Science in Sport, the world's highest standard of banned substance testing.
Thank you to Science in Sport for sponsoring the Cycling Podcast. We're still in the queue waiting to get on the ferry here. If I was able to get online to order some Science in Sport products for dinner, I would definitely be doing that. There is currently a 25% discount for all listeners to the Cycling Podcast. Go to scienceinsport.com, and when you check out, enter the code SISCP25. We literally have nothing to eat in this car, do we?
There are some biscuits. We got a free bottle of, a nice bottle of Pasito. Is the handbrake on, Lionel? No, it's not. We got a nice bottle of Pasito, Sicilian Pasito wine yesterday. It's a sweet dessert wine. And there were some biscuits for dipping in the boxes. and we dug into those last night, didn't we?
Well, I didn't. I haven't tasted the biscuits yet. Talking about last night, people who might be tuning in specifically to hear the second instalment of Learn Italian with Lionel, or Lionel Learns Italian, or whatever it was, I feel like a bit of a hospital pass this, Daniel. I was expecting it to be something simple like how to order an ice cream, you know, lesson one, how to order an ice cream in Italian, or maybe I'd learn what the Italian for Maglia Rosa is in this podcast, but instead I had to read out something that was beyond me, the historical and cultural significance of Etna. We're shelving that, I think, Lionel Learns Italian.
I had you down for a chapter of Dante tomorrow.
Anyway, let's talk about everybody else. We've talked a lot about Mitchelton Scott. We haven't really talked about Tom Dumoulin, but he was doing his Tom Dumoulin thing.
Well, we spoke to Tom Dumoulin, even better.
Well, obviously. But we haven't assessed his performance. I mean, he was one of the riders that didn't quite go with that Pino, Pozzovivo, Bennett, Yates move that looked sort of significant and ended up being the move that shaped Simon Yates's... it led to Simon Yates then accelerating extremely hard. Dumoulin, though, rode the way he often does, which is measuring his effort, and he seems to be the master of that, and today didn't suggest any different.
Well, he said earlier, we heard him say earlier in the podcast, that he hasn't felt that great and there's more to come from him. So all looking pretty good from Sunweb's point of view. They had a couple of riders who were stuck behind the crash before the climb to Etna. So Laurens Tindam and Louis Vervecka couldn't give Dumoulin all the help they wanted to. But I think they're pretty happy, pretty confident. Other teams, other riders who are happy and confident tonight, I think Pino is pretty... we'll be pretty satisfied with the way things have gone so far. And Miguel Angel Lopez, we promised, didn't we, Lionel, that tonight would be a bit of an Astana special. Did we promise that? There was an overabundance of sky yesterday, and we didn't really get to Astana today. But tomorrow, I promise, we're going to get to Astana, and we're going to find out what's going on with Miguel Angel Lopez. He put in a couple of attacks in the last few kilometres. We fully expect him to be one of the best climbers in the race. That's not really the issue for Lopez, is it? The problems for him are going to come in terms of staying out of trouble and then in the time trial later in the race. But Astana, I think, will probably be slightly alarmed that they missed the move today and they did have to do a lot of work. Having said that, they didn't really lose, well, they didn't lose any significant ground as far as Miguel Angel Lopez is concerned. And they've also got a couple of quiet days coming up now.
Going to have to interrupt you there, Daniel, because we are being summoned forwards to go onto the ferry. We will conclude this part probably on board the ferry. Finally on the ferry. Daniel, it's only taken around about an hour. As we were pulling on, someone leant out of the Lotto Fixall team car. It was Lars Back, the rider Lars Back, saying, "Hey, don't let these guys on the ferry." I don't know
that's
what we've done to
upset him. That's the second time in 2 years he's given us a brush. I remember last year I tried to speak to him in Bormio and he said, "Not now, not now." He's an affable fellow, isn't he?
He is, yeah, he is. We better just conclude our wrap-up of the overall contenders and who did what. We talked a fair bit about Sky yesterday, but Chris Froome, what did he think when the heat went on? He didn't look comfortable, and yet then in the last sort of 800 metres, suddenly seemed to find some legs from somewhere and looked really, pretty lively.
Yeah, I thought it was typical Froome. I said yesterday that his condition, the way he's riding, reminds me a little bit of the way he was riding at the start of last summer. A couple of people took issue with that on social media. They said, well, no, it's a completely different situation because in this race he's got a superior time trialist in Dumoulin. The scenario as far as the race and rivals is concerned might be different, but I think... it is fairly similar in the sense that Froome can follow at the moment. He can't necessarily attack. He sometimes looks like he's in difficulty, but then he always finds those 20 or 30 extra watts to go with the moves when he needs to go with the moves. And it looks very much as though he is hoping to at least ride into form in the latter half of the race.
You mentioned Lopez, of course. Pozzovivo was up there. We've mentioned him a bit. Fabio Aru, the other big Italian hope, looks so-so to me at the moment.
Yeah, and as I said earlier, I think he acknowledges that himself. Thought his team looked pretty strong. They had some a lot of experience in there, guys like Ulisse Marcato going into the Giro, but he's another guy who's not raced that much, but it doesn't seem to be, you know, that lack of racing doesn't seem to be causing other riders a problem. Simon Yates hasn't raced that much, Thibaut Pinot hasn't raced that much, Tom Dumoulin as well, but Aru is the one who looks a little bit undercooked, doesn't he? But again, you know, he's a diesel. He will be thinking that he's going to come good in the last week of the race, but again, he needs to find a lot of time in the mountains. He's not a guy who's going to get anywhere close to Tom Dumoulin or Chris Froome in a time trial.
And lastly, three riders who have conceded ground today. Michael Woods, not disastrous, 57 seconds behind Chavez, and so 31 behind the Dumoulin group, but not perhaps what we would have expected of him. I thought, particularly how good he looked a couple of days ago, I would have thought he would have done a bit better than that. Two riders who look already out of it, Dimension Data's leader Louis Menkes lost 3.5 minutes. He's going to struggle to, there's so many good riders ahead of him that even a place in the top 10 is might slip away if he doesn't turn things around pretty quickly.
Yeah, I think so. Another one is Formolo, who got stuck. Was he involved in the crash?
Kind of just caught up in the back end of the crash and was off his bike. And there wasn't an awful lot of help from his teammates, to be fair. I don't know what they were doing
what's interesting is, I think today underlined the fact that they're, as far as the general classification is concerned, they're fighting on two fronts, because Patrick Conrad, the Austrian rider, was allowed to ride his own race. And he has been riding very well. I think he finished about 20th today, so he lost about a minute. And I actually spoke to the direct sportif there, Jens Zemke at Bora Hansgrohe, this morning. And, you know, he was obviously pretty encouraged by the way Formula had started the race. He'd looked quick, he'd looked nippy in those couple of uphill finishes we'd had. But they were quite cagey as well about the general classification challenge. Their focus here is very much on winning a stage, some kind of stage, any kind of stage.
Well, we should probably wrap it up there. I did say last night we'd play the second half of my conversation with Team Sky's Dave Brailsford this evening, but there's been so much else going on, we'll save that for tomorrow as well. Dave Brailsford actually got into a helicopter at the finish at Etna. I don't know who else was on board that helicopter, but I presume they were being whisked away to avoid all of this shambles, sitting on a ferry. Well, yeah, I mean, you know.
He got dinner.
I bet he got dinner, yeah. It does strike me, as we look at the Lotto car in front and a rider here with a compression sock pulled up to the knee, sticking his leg out of the window of the team car, it's 20 past nine, nobody's going to be getting to their hotels until, well, what? It's going to be half past 10, isn't it, at least? It's been a late finish. All right, tomorrow's stage is not particularly taxing. It's a relaxed start. It starts well after lunch. It's not terribly long, and it's flat up to Praia Amare. It could be a nice sort of traditional Giro piano stage with just a fast finish. I can't see anyone other than Viviani winning that. Maybe his third stage win on the cards tomorrow. But this opening 6 days of the Giro, or six stages of the Giro, have been pretty challenging. Israel and the transfer from there, stressful kind of racing on Sicilian roads, and the transfers have been difficult, and it's going to catch up with a few people. I know it's the same for everybody, but everybody copes with it differently, not least you and I, Daniel. But we've kept ourselves pretty calm today. We had a minor flare-up when we missed the turning for the start earlier on, but apart from that, I think we've handled it pretty well.
Come on, Lionel, let's get you fed and watered and to bed.
Thank you, Daniel.
A community around the world. Stories and films with the most compelling characters. The world's finest apparel. Explore the world of cycling with Rafa. Just
quello vino, ci girano la tenevo giardino, che la raccolgo con l'acqua e lo vino.